Thank you, Brother Dan. Well, Brother Jerry has chosen an interesting topic to me. I kind of got, had some memories. It brings back a lot of memories on this one. His title is A Little David. A Little David. Brother Jerry.
Believe me, there is no slight intended by that, because all the Davids I know are magnificent and powerful and a tremendous example of faith. Two things before I start. Judith and I and others, if we've talked, you know that when God shuts a door, He opens another one for us. And we thought that way about Asilomar. You remember how beautiful that setting was, and relaxing and conducive to a just fellowship and learning about all of God's ways and purposes and so on. And the door opens here at Seebeck. So we're very appreciative of Seattle for finding that, and it is a delightful, relaxing, most blessed environment. And then, for the weekend, I've been suffering under duress. You know that old adage that says they save the best for last? I thought, I didn't think I could live up to that, only to finally realize that I'm not the last. Brother Alan Allers is the last. So that gives me great comfort. Throughout the Bible history as we know it, God, Jehovah, has had many relationships with special people in the Bible. And as far as I know, there's only one time that God said of an ordinary man, a man after mine own heart. And of course, he was speaking of David, the little shepherd boy. And actually, it's a full quote is from the book of Acts, 13th chapter, and it's the 22nd verse. And it says, He, God, testified concerning him and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after mine own heart. Of course, we all know the story of David. It's a very special one. Not only one that provides us an example of faith, but one that shows someone seeking the kingdom of God, how we've been supercharged this weekend by this thought of the kingdom of God, seeking heavenly things, divine, spiritual things. And it was from an early age that this young man, David, had done that. You all know the story. But let's look at the life of David and see if we can't come to a better understanding as to why God spoke these words about him. Young shepherd boy that grew into a man. And a man that pleased God so much so that he said he was a man after his own heart. Isn't that something? Not just he said it, but he said it about an ordinary man here on earth. So what do you suppose David could have said, or what he could have done, that would make God say that? And what a blessed statement from God it is. Obviously, we'd all love to have that said about us from our Father in heaven. Well, obviously, David was an exceptional person. And let's go to the scriptures and see what we can find for some answers. It says that he was a shepherd boy. And do you know what a shepherd is? I'm sure you've got all some preconceived ideas about it. There's a lot to being a shepherd. It's a very responsible position. And if you understand really what goes into being a shepherd, you're going to have a better understanding, I think, of the glory of God, and especially in this story of David. We are told that a shepherd is really a person who tends sheep. He feeds them, and he guards them. We use the term sheep here because that's what David was, a shepherd of the sheep. And the occupation dates quite a ways back, all the way to Adam's son, Abel. If the family or the owner of the sheep had a family, It was his own family that took care of the sheep and shepherding them. And they were really taken care of quite well because they cared about the sheep that belonged to that family. Now, if he was a wealthy person, he would hire somebody. And do you think that that same attention to detail and concern was in existence by that person that was hired with no connection with the family? We think not. In many cases, that was borne out. The shepherd's equipment probably included a tent, a garment in which he could wrap himself, a rod and a sling for defense, a bag for keeping provisions of food, and he also carried a long curved staff or crook used in guiding the flock. Their life obviously wasn't easy. It was nomadic, especially during Abraham's time. They tried to stay in one place, and then they would send the shepherds out with their flock, only to come back at night. Sometimes there were several flocks of sheep together, and many shepherds. And they would bring them back to the sheep fold at night. And then there was a doorkeeper to watch over them at night. As I'm going through this, I'm trying to think of this. The chaos that must have existed the next morning when the doorkeeper would open it up and there's all of these hundreds, thousands of sheep. And to me, they all look alike. The shepherd didn't take and just call to them, but he, after the door was open and these sheep started to come out, each shepherd would take and go off in a different direction. And he would be making his sounds or his personal call to his sheep. And the sheep would separate themselves and follow their shepherd. Their trust was so great. After a while, and he figured he had most of his sheep there, he would count them to ensure that was the case. Once satisfied that everything was okay, off he went to the area that he was going to be in that day. I've mentioned that their life was not easy. They were exposed to the elements. They had no protection. Rain, cold, extreme heat, and every other element you could think of. They had to protect that flock not only from predators, but from thieves. And they had to keep them from scattering. They had to look for their lost ones. They had to carry the feeble and the weary ones. They had to care for the sick and the injured, the broken limbs, the injuries they suffered, and they would rub olive oil on it to heal them. He would even help during the birthing process. So it was a very responsible position this shepherd had. And what did he get paid? He got paid in sheep. Most likely he got paid in animals. The other side of that is, if a sheep came up missing, he had to make restitution for that, of that sheep that was in his care. And the only exception to that was if the sheep was killed or destroyed by a wild beast. That was the only exception. Otherwise, they had to make restitution. So, obviously, to be a shepherd was not an easy task, and it took an exceptional, dedicated, loving individual to take care of those sheep. So, let's see. David enters our story now. And there's a time of war between the Israelite and Philistine armies. The Philistines have just invaded Israel, and their advance is stopped in the land of Judah. So I was really happy that Brother David Rice had taken the time to prepare this map for me. This being the Sea of Galilee, David. This being the Jordan River. This being the Dead Sea. Approximately off the top of the Dead Sea is where Bethlehem is located, right? And then in this area here, we have the mountains, or the Judean mountains, they're called. Well, this is kind of the place that takes place, and we're going to learn about, I'll give you a head start here, Goliath is coming into this story, and he's from Gath, and that's someplace around in here also. Pretty close. Their advance is stopped in the land of Judah, and it's in a valley that's overlooked, and there's two hillsides, if you can visualize this. The invading Philistines are on one side, and they're looking across this valley and over onto the other hill, and there's where the Israelites are camped. As you can well imagine, they're keeping eyes on each other. And they're waiting. They're waiting for the other one to make the first move. And who makes the first move? Comes from the Philistines. And what a move it is. My goodness. Nothing seems to be happening when suddenly out from the ranks of the Philistine army steps this giant. And we learn later that his name is Goliath, and he is not at all ordinary. The scriptures tell us that he stops and he shouts over to the Israelites a challenge. And you know what? The challenge really seems to be humanitarian. Who would expect it? Humanitarian in the sense that the two armies aren't going to have to fight if they obey his or succumb to his challenge. Because his challenge, Goliath says to Israel, supply me one man in single combat. And whichever man wins, the defeated man's side is to become the servant of the other. What a great way to fight a war, isn't it? Just two people at risk here. But can you imagine the consequences if you happen to be on the losing side? Well, as the story goes, the challenge is shouted to the men of Israel every morning. And then again at night, what's he do? The same challenge is shouted again. And that happens for 40 days, both morning and night. Imagine that. Here is the most powerful army in the world being challenged by one man. And there is no one in the entire army of Israel that possesses enough courage to accept the challenge. This is the same army that has on its side the mighty and powerful Jehovah God. But let's be fair with the Israelites and take a look at this giant that they are fearful of. The account is in 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter. And we find that Goliath is from Gath. And he is indeed a giant. It says he stood anywhere between 9.5 and 10.5 feet tall. It's negotiable, but he's big and he's apparently well proportioned. Let me give you an example, if I may. I can reach about 8 feet. Okay, there's 8 feet, so about 10. So maybe Goliath is 10.5 feet, maybe 9.5 feet. Whichever the case is, he's pretty darn big. Now, what's the average size of an Israelite at that time? I don't know. Does anybody have a thought? 5.5 feet tall, maybe? So this was huge. You're getting ahead of my story, brother. That's on two more pages. It says that he weighed about 450 pounds, maybe 500 pounds, and that's without armor. That's based on my height and my weight. I made Goliath that size. We're talking about a big man, a giant indeed. Let's look at the armor that this man wore. It says it consisted of a bronze helmet. Bronze is not light. A coat of scale armor, that means it's layered, made of bronze, and it's estimated that according to the Bible, it weighs about 125 pounds that this man is carrying. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves. You know what greaves are? Those are the shin guards that go from your knee down to your ankle and protects the front of your legs. They're made out of bronze. It says that he had a bronze javelin slung on his back. He wore a large sword at his waist. And then he carried a spear that was so big that it weighed 15 pounds, just the head of the spear. Here's a book. I asked David with his expertise. He said this is about a pound and a half, maybe. Take 13 of these or 14 of these things and see what you've got for weight. That's just the head of the spear. So, you get an idea of the size of this man that's standing shouting this challenge, right? And of course he had a shield, and it doesn't even say what size it was or how much it weighs. But standing about 10 feet tall, fully outfitted with armor, he's got to be around 700 or 800 pounds standing there. Daunting to say the least. Now Israel, and more specifically King Saul, was really in a difficult position. And at this time, I would hope that you're asking yourself, why would Saul be in a difficult position? Well, it's well known that Saul himself was a very tall man. So it stands to reason that the king himself, King Saul, was really the only one that could and should step forward and accept this challenge. But he didn't. Let's leave the battlefield and we'll go back to a place called Bethlehem. This is where we're introduced to a man named Jesse. It says we're told that he was the father of 8 sons, the 3 oldest of which are in the army serving under King Saul, and that the youngest, David, is at home tending sheep. And apparently at the time it was customary for the family of someone in the army to take and send gifts or treats or something special from home to the one serving in the army. So Jesse says to his youngest, David, take this roasted grain and bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp. And oh, he said, take along these 10 cheeses and give to the commander of their unit. So I think if you take care of the boss, you're going to have a little bit better feel. Is that right, Richard? Is that the way it works? And then he says, I want you to see how your brothers are doing and bring back some assurance from them to me. Having been in the submarine service, and those of you that have been in service are away from home for a long time, can you imagine the importance of such a loving gesture as that visit from David? If you've ever been at a mail call and they call your name and they give you a letter from home, it reduces many to tears. And then imagine the excitement and the feeling when there is a cake or cookies in this package for you. Well, that's what was happening with his 3 older brothers when David brought them to them. And not only was it just that they brought these gifts, he was there in person. How special that was. A visit in the flesh from a family member. But you know what? I'm getting ahead of myself. David's father told him that his brothers are with King Saul and the other fighting men, and he's to go there. So he leaves really early in the morning. And he arrives in this valley, and he gets to the Israelite side, obviously. And they're just getting ready to go out to battle. A lot of confusion. The first thing David does is locate the keeper of supplies and gives the grain and the cheeses and so on for them for safekeeping. And then he runs out and finds his brothers. And as he's running around and they finally connect with each other, imagine the excitement. And all of this, while there's a war just about ready to take place. So they're having a good time just catching up on everything from home and so on. And he's enjoying being with his brothers. And wouldn't you know it, it was at this moment that Goliath decides to step forward and shout his usual challenge. Of course, David being there hears it. Now, here's where we have to do some surmising. Of course, we know the benefit of, or have the benefit of knowing the whole story, but imagine what's going through this young man's mind. Here he is, a little shepherd boy, and he's at the front lines. Two armies are about intent on destroying each other, and he's standing among the most powerful army in the world, Israel. He's joyous and relieved to be with his three brothers, and he's thinking, I can go home and tell Dad that everything is fine and they're just healthy and everything is good. When suddenly he hears this booming voice shouting this challenge to the Israelite army. The account tells us that the men of Israel, appearing on hearing the challenge, actually fled from Goliath in fear. David can't believe any of this. He can't believe that this could possibly be happening. Surely this isn't for real. So let's pause right here for just a moment and consider this remarkable situation, especially in its proper setting. One, for 400 years, the children of Israel have had no ruler but for Jehovah God himself. They came to trust him for everything. Two, when Canaan was partitioned among the 12 tribes, they had been under the administration of judges, but their supreme ruler was always God, and God alone. And even though the other nations had to worry about imperfect rulerships and laws and so on that weren't fair, the Jews didn't have any of those problems. And other nations that were trying to conquer everybody else, really, Israel hadn't had too much of that either. But now, the integrity of Israel had always been protected by the Lord God Almighty. All the forces of the universe were at their disposal, weren't they? That's how powerful God is. And all they had to do was remain in harmony and obey him. None of this was rumor or hearsay to the Israelite. These things were demonstrated to them over and over again in ways that they could see, that they could feel, they could hear. Think about this. Here's some examples. They knew the 10 plagues of Egypt had brought them their release from slavery. This is part of their history. The parting of the waters of the Red Sea. What a marvelous, magnificent thing that was to happen. They had seen this. The pillars of cloud of light that led them through perfectly through the wilderness. They saw that. This is all part of their thing. This was repeated to them probably every day of their life from their priests. The list goes on and on. And you know what? Above all of this, faith wasn't even necessary. So wouldn't you think that with such a history of assurance and help from the Almighty Jehovah God that this nation, Israel, and that her people, the Israelites, would be the boldest, most courageous, and most confident people on earth? Wouldn't you think that? That's what David thought. He understood it because it was the essence of his life that he trusted in the living God without exception. As a shepherd boy, God was everything to him. And yet this one lone Philistine giant is standing up there taunting the whole army of Israel. And it says that they fled from him and were greatly afraid. Well, we all know what David eventually did. But do you remember what words David used when this happened with Goliath? Remember, they're in this valley and you got the Philistines on one side and the Israelites on the other, and this giant steps out for 40 days and nights. He's shouting this deal. And David hears this, and he's standing with this mighty army, the most mighty army on the face of the earth. And this giant issues this challenge. And as David stands there and hears, he's astonished. Not by the challenge. Not by the size of this giant. That doesn't astonish him. He's astonished because the army of the Israelites fled in fear. David saw that Goliath, by defying the army of Israel, was defying something even greater than that. he saw that he was defying Jehovah. And that's what escaped the men of Israel. The indignation and outrage that swept over David must have been a sight to behold. And it was all because of the fear he saw in the Israelites. So here's the words that David spoke. And they're recorded for us in the first book of Samuel, 17th chapter again, 26th verse. David said this, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" With these words, David was trying to instill in the men of Israel a measure of his own spirit of indignation and of his outrage. But it was to no avail. The men of Israel would not respond. We all knew that David wasn't in the army, and really had good conscience. He could have turned around and gone home. But he didn't do that, did he? Knowing that this was Saul's responsibility and not his, he could have gone away. So, why didn't David walk away? It was because David lived close to God. He lived so close to God, he was so much part of his life, he couldn't go away. David felt that any insult to Jehovah was an insult to himself, a personal insult. We know by the account that David didn't just stand there. It tells us that this young boy went about, picture this, this young boy went about voicing his indignation against Israel's inaction, against their do-nothing position. Today we would say he was in their face. Boy, was he ever. You know, asking one soldier after another, and this included his own brothers, said, challenging them, why aren't you doing something? He wasn't making himself very popular. So, he had everyone in camp upset. It's obviously recognized. And the behavior of David is reported to King Saul right away. King Saul has him brought forward. When the king saw David, he was surprised. Here's this ruddy-faced, handsome young boy, young man, and Saul is just astonished. Apparently, judging from the strong words that David had been issuing, he thought this was some kind of a big person. So, but standing there is anything but. And David's character is demonstrated immediately because David came right to the point. He said to Saul, "Your men are frightened of Goliath." And then David continues, he says, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. I, your servant, will go and fight him." Saul responded, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a boy, and he has been a fighting man from his youth." David responded by telling Saul a story. And the story was really quite simple. It was the secret of the boldness and the courage that he had. It dealt with an incident of his life as a shepherd. It said, in essence, this is what the story was. It says, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. And when a lion and bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it. I struck it and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair and struck it and killed it." And then he gives Saul the secret of his courage. He says, "Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. The uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." David knew that he didn't conquer this lion and the bear on his own strength. And he didn't take any credit for it. He fully understood the awesome power of these animals. Either one of them could have taken with one swat, killed a full-grown steer or a horse. David loved his sheep. And when one of them was threatened, he laid down his life immediately, probably issued a prayer, and this went forth. Brethren, do you remember who God chooses to do his work? Is it the powerful and the mighty? He chooses the commonplace. He chooses the humble. He chooses the meek. If it's God who has all the power that's needed to accomplish His work, He doesn't look for power in any one of us. When He chooses, He then looks only at the heart and then gives all the power that is needed. Well, David was such a man. It says, David was, I'll go on ahead here. King Saul listened to all this, and you know what he said? This is beautiful. It's very short. He says, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Man, look at, you've got two armies that are ready to destroy each other. You've got this Philistine. So Saul puts his faith in him, but he also dresses him in his coat of armor, his personal armor, and a bronze helmet, and he gives him the sword and the tunic, and he says, "David, try walking around now." David says, "I can't walk around in this stuff. I'm not used to it." He takes it off, and he says to Saul that he couldn't use him because he wasn't used to it. So then he takes his staff in his hand, and he goes and he chooses five smooth stones from the stream. He puts them in a pouch of his shepherd's bag, and then with his sling in his hand, he approaches the Philistine. I know you're painting a picture in your mind of this unbelievable scene. The account continues. It says, "Meanwhile, the Philistine, with a shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David." Now, we would guess that he probably picked the smallest Philistine in the army to put alongside of himself so that he looked even bigger. He looked over at David and saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome, and he despised him. This is according to the account. He said to David, and I appreciated this from Brother Brad Sweeney's talk. He said, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Wow. What a story. You remember the scene? It's like an amphitheater. There's this valley, impending battle ready to take place. You got the Philistines and you got the Israelites, and this Goliath is standing there ready to do battle. And here's this little boy with this sling. I paint a picture of a little boy. Maybe he's a young man, but still, youth. This challenge had been going on for 40 days and night. As Goliath issued his challenge, obviously everybody heard it. So David pauses and he lifts his voice so that all who heard the giant can now hear his voice. And his voice carried with it probably, I'm sure, the quality of his faith and the depth of his humility. And here's what David said. And the battlefield is listening. He says, "You come against me with a sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth. And the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves. For the battle is the Lord's, and He will give all of you into our hands." Can you imagine what he listening to these words, what they must be thinking? And as a final gesture of contempt and to show his utter fearlessness, what does David do? He runs out and meets this giant. He takes off running. The giant, so fully armed, probably didn't even have time to draw his sword before the stone from David's sling sank into his forehead and the giant goes over. David walked up, drew the giant's sword, cut from the sheath, cut off his head. That's the story of David, the little shepherd boy, and the giant Goliath. The question we ask is, what would make God say to this young man? He was secretly anointed to be the next king. Nobody knew that. He had been helping Saul with his demons, I guess, with playing music and so on. Do each of us have that same power and unwavering strength of faith that David did? That our Father in heaven, Jehovah God, can and will conquer all? Well, he's been an individual for us to admire and to respect. He had tremendous conviction and faith. Let us remember that this young boy stood in the face of unbelievable odds, trusting only in God to carry him through. May our efforts be along those same lines as we seek to do His will in all cases, to build our own strength. Let us do as David did. Seek the heavenly things, the divine things. He had the time to contemplate all the majesty of the heavens as a young shepherd boy lying on his back at night. Let us always seek the kingdom of God. Let us thank Him, let us praise Him, and let us trust Him always. Friends, may God continue to guide and protect you in your service, not only to Him, but in the help of your brothers and sisters also walk in the same walk that you are.